This is your Week in Gaming, episode 5, recorded for the 14th of April, 2023, to bring you all the latest news from the world of gaming. On today's episode of the podcast, Sam is AFK, I use some torchlights, Chris gives up on PC gaming, and Richard is pay to win. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 5 of your Week in Gaming. Wow, 5 episodes, guys, and none of us have wanted to rip each other's hair out or necks or heads off necks.
Speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself. 100%.
I'm joined by co-hosts Richard and Chris tonight. Sam, unfortunately, is AFK with IRL things, and she'll be joining us for the next episode. So, how's
it? At least we know what a Samantha-shaped hole looks like now.
Yeah, there is a definite lack of femininity on the other podcast now.
I think we've been swearing more at each other, which we won't do here.
What happens off podcast stays off podcast. But how was your guys' little long weekend?
I was going to point out, you know, because we spent it all playing Farming Simulator after we broke the story, and we all, well, Richard already had it, but you and I got it. So you know how our weekend was. We spent it together.
It was a ton of fun.
I find it very funny. I meant to tell you this last night that the console gamer, or the Mac gamer being me, is the only one playing this game on Steam, and you two are both using Xbox Game Pass. I find it quite ironic.
Subscription services are the way, my brother.
I mean, 200 Rand for 5 people to have access to Xbox Game Pass, and I get to play games like Farm Simulator and others at, you know, whenever I want to. It's great and definitely worth. Gaming news now, and Nintendo have decided to go knocking on Discord's doors to get details of a user who apparently leaked about 200 pages of artwork of the upcoming Zelda game, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Back in February, Discord received DMCA notice to take down some artwork in Discord channels, which took them around 8 minutes, says PC Gamer. However, after the closing of a Discord server and taking down of the media, a subpoena has been issued to Discord to obtain details of a specific user, including names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, and more. According to the filing, this is all in the name of protecting the rights granted to Nintendo of America under the Copyright Act. This isn't the first time something like this has happened, with Genshin Impact doing something similar back in December 2022. Chances are Discord won't fight this in order to ensure compliance with legal obligations. This is just another reminder to everybody that you're not entirely anonymous on Discord.
Never mind on Discord. You're not anonymous online, ever.
And I think pretty much.
All of these services that we think are completely free of a sort of censorship, and I don't want to go too far into the censorship hole because I am like very strongly against it, but there's never such a thing as, if anything is transferring your messages from one device to another, it is being logged on a server somewhere, and that is not going to be deleted. So that is there forever. Mm-hmm. So if you can pick up your phone and read the same messages you can on your laptop or your gaming PC, that is being logged somewhere on a server to enable that. The same goes for Telegram. The same goes for WhatsApp. The same goes for all of those services that claim to be end-to-end encrypted and all that. It may be true, they may have encryption, but whatever's even the encrypted stuff is being stored somewhere. And it's just another reminder that you're not ever going to be anonymous on Discord. And things like VPNs that everybody goes on about don't help, because you're still logging onto that VPN and then logging into Facebook. So you're still identifying yourself no matter what IP address you're coming from. So unless you're really careful about these sort of things, you're never going to be a completely anonymous. And there are services that help, things like Proton Mail that don't ask any sort of, any know your customer information to open email accounts and that sort of stuff. Those sort of things help, but you're never anonymous.
Yep. And
so I'm deleting Tor browser. Damn it.
Look, I'm all for...
So get on Tor browser and then leak your DNS, because you're not using DNS over TLS or HTTPS, so you're still not anonymous.
That's game
There's
over.
No such thing as anonymous. You have to be so careful that it's,
the hoops that you need to jump through. Obviously, there's going to be people that are going to do that. In this case, the specific user that decided to leak this clearly wasn't. So at the end of the day, I'm all for it. Look, I would like to see more things, you know, more information about games from production houses and everything. But I understand the reason why they keep some of it gated, you know, until later on, you know, for press release and everything. People that leak or spoil things are terrible people, I feel. So,
but how is this different to like somebody sitting with mates in a bar, showing them pictures on their phone? How is it different? It's a private conversation on a private server that's not open for everybody to log in and look at. How is it different?
I guess it depends on the agreements that that person or that individual has struck. Like if you're working for an organization, you probably have a contract which restricts the sharing of this type of content outside of your organization, which you've probably infringed on. Then you've gone and you've shared it with other people. That then leaks to the wider community. It's a knock-on effect. You've spent $20 million on your marketing strategy, which now, you know, is out the window. Like it has terrible financial, you know, repercussions if it does make it into the wider market. That if I was a marketer and I had a launch strategy that was well-timed and well-positioned and had, you know, all of these timed events and then suddenly someone leaks everything, and, you know, that could have terrible consequences to the effectiveness of a campaign.
So what you're saying is be smarter about how you leak things.
Look, if you're going to leak things, speak to Richard so you can hide your DNS, you can use Tor browser, and don't use Facebook, Discord, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, WeChat, nothing.
Tor browser is the biggest load of nonsense. There's so many federal exit nodes and stuff that. Anyway, we're not going to go into cybersecurity now. But I don't know. I'm on the fence because I agree that there's copyright and copyright exists for a reason, but I also feel like if you're sharing things amongst your friends, you don't know where this comes from. You're assuming that it's an insider leak, and you're sure assuming the person who leaked it is an insider. It might not be. It might have come from somewhere else. They might have saved it or 4chan or something and put it into that group. But you know, I think the overarching point is, and it's Andrew's point, is you're never anonymous online. So don't assume you ever are, no matter how many steps you take to try and protect yourself. And that's an important message for anyone.
I mean, I was hoping the point is don't leak intellectual property unless you have the permission of the publisher or the partner to do so. And again, yeah, we're assuming that it's an insider, because who else would have the sort of sensitive information that would warrant this response? And if it is a 4chan, then it should be the original 4chan poster they're going after, and not, you know, whoever reshared it on Discord. But yeah, I think just get the permission of whoever. I mean, if you're in doubt, just ask permission. If they say no, then probably not a good thing to do, right?
My internet anonymity strategy is always don't be the slowest person being chased by a bear.
Fair enough.
That's a pretty good thing.
So you
just outrun the other person that's trying to outrun the bear. Exactly. That's all you need to do.
Yeah.
So you're saying the Discord individual is the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
Be okay. Faster than that guy.
because like Andrew said, Discord will roll over because they want to, you know, want to uphold their GDPR and whatever requirements, whereas 4chan, not exactly known as being super compliant to all those sort of things. So,
not at all.
But I mean, it's just low-hanging fruit, that's all.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that might be a bit of a tangent. Anyway, in the quest for IP protection, how far is too far? Have Monster Energy completely lost their minds? According to Game Rant, Monster Energy are notorious for going after brands that could have anything even remotely similar to their own, including Pokemon, short for Pocket Monsters, and even Monster Hunter on Nintendo, at least Monster Hunter and Capcom's IP. They have gone after an NBA team, the Toronto Raptors, over their Monster Claw emblem, and this goes without mentioning Ubisoft's game Immortal Phoenix Rising, which was originally called Gods, and you guessed it, Monsters. And despite Ubisoft claiming the name of the game Monsters and decided to continue their legal action, this news comes shortly after the first reports around Monster targeting an indie game called Dark Deception Monsters and Mortals. Some have accused Monster of being called trademark trolls using legal action to stifle competition, although it's certainly a case to be argued that the word monster should fall under the umbrella term of far too common a word to be trademarked, much like when Paris Hilton attempted to trademark the phrase, "That's hot."
I don't know what they're trying to do. It's they're almost as petty as Activision with the whole, you know, the map thing that we discussed just last week, you know, going after. It's like, what are you trying to achieve by doing this?
I think Chris probably can ratify the reason why I think this, and that is purely no publicity is bad publicity.
So I absolutely think it's going to generate millions of impressions across the internet in regions where Monster's definitely sold all around the world. So yeah, I think, you know, there's no bad publicity here. People are going to be on the fence. People are going to be talking about Monster. And in a world where Red Bull's marketing just comprehensively trances monsters. Like, I'm sure it's not a bad thing. And I think, Richard, I actually agree with you. It's a word that's far too common to trademark, in my opinion. If a word has been used for more than 200 to 500 years, lay off. You can't own that. What are you doing? That doesn't make any sense. It's not even a competitor product. It's a different product,
exactly.
Different channel, different product category entirely. Like, no, it's purely PR, 100%.
Yeah, some have accused Monster of being called trademark trolls using legal action to stifle competition. I'm sorry, since when was Pokemon and Monster Hunter World competition for an energy drink? It just seems like a ridiculous thing.
Just stay in your lane.
It's got to be drumming up publicity. It's like just a buzz thing. That's all it is.
You're going to read this article online. You're going to walk into your store and you're going to see Monster and you're going to be like, ah, I read about that. And chances are it's going to promote you purchasing power to purchase one of those. And I think that's all it is.
Look, Monster has only been around since 2002. I was playing Pokemon before Monster was around, in conceptualized, founded, launched, whatever you want to call it. So, like, how can you go after Pokemon or any brand that's been around longer, or the word's been around longer than you've ever existed? It doesn't make any sense.
It's publicity, I think, at the end of the day. And Monster, go back and make energy drinks, rather.
Delicious energy drinks, the best tasting energy drinks, just saying. Xbox's Phil Spencer announced this week that Microsoft Game Pass is now available to another 40 countries around the Earthball, including Lithuania, Malta, Luxembourg, and a load of others. So if Game Pass hasn't been available in your region yet, now's a good time to check if you can finally subscribe. That's the good news. The bad news is that the famous $1 free trial of the service has finally been closed down, which saw you getting the first 30 days of service for $1. So you'll have to pony up the full subscription cost from day one. The service costs around $10 US or your local equivalent, so it's a fantastic deal, particularly since it now includes EA Play, and because Bethesda is now a Microsoft studio, you'll get day one access to Starfield when it launches by subscribing to the service too.
I just want to point out, I think that $1 claim is technically correct and technically incorrect at the same time. Technically, the $1 free trial, or the $1 trial, or whatever you want to call it, that first month, that's a marketing initiative. And marketing and operations and, you know, sales fulfillment are technically separate. And so the marketing is not always on, as far as I understand it. And I could be wrong here. But my understanding of the $1 free trial is it is dependent on region. It's dependent on a lot of factors. And it's usually a marketing initiative. And that's usually to get new customers into the funnel when there might be particularly strong competition or whatever reason it might be. So I don't think it's a given that it should be offered permanently, always on to everybody. If it's a marketing trial and marketing funds, then it would be a requirement for the marketing funnel to turn on when it was needed. So just from my side, I think that's a bit unfair.
I agree. It has been a thing since Game Pass launched. And I think the reason why it's news in this context is that it was part of Phil Spencer's video. He uploaded a video of himself to YouTube telling everybody about these things. And one of the things he said was the $1 free trial has been sunset. So it definitely was a launch day product, and they've just had it running for much longer than you would have expected. I mean, for almost 2 years. And I'm sure I've unsubscribed from Game Pass and resubscribed, I mean, given the $1 trial again at some stage or another.
Correct.
So I feel like it's been going around for a while, but I think in this context it seems like it's reasonably final if the sort of head of Xbox is like, hey, we're sunsetting this promotion.
I mean, again, it's one of those situations where you know, you go into Spa today or where whatever your local supermarket is, you pay, you know, $4.99 for something, and then 3 days later it's on special for $3.99. You're not going to get your one local currency back, are you?
Nope.
So it was a promotion. Yes, you've lost that now. You can't do it. It served its purpose. Move on. Pay the full subscription. It's worth it anyway. Like, chillax.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's a great service. Lots of games, and it's cheap, cheap.
And the greatest thing is that, as Richard mentioned, with Bethesda being on there, it means that you can play all 23 editions of Skyrim if you really wanted to.
Or Fallout 76.
You know, Fallout 76 gets such a bad rap. It's really worth playing now. Anyway, I'm not going to go into it, but if you haven't played it, it's definitely worth playing now. Even if you're a single player, you don't have to play with other people. And the other thing I wanted to mention is if Activision Blizzard's sale goes through, this would also include Blizzard and Activision's catalog, which is all the CODs and all that. So, you know, it's set to be a super good value proposition, more than it already is.
Oh, yeah. So, Penguin's Promising Playable. I'm going to take you back 13 years to May 2010. Richard, I don't know if you recall what you were doing back in that year, or even Chris for that matter.
He was Richard was being a disgruntled ex-employee of Fair, whatever podcast he was on then.
So back in 2010, one of my favorite games was released, and that is Alan Wake. It was developed and published by Remedy Entertainment, and it was given good accolades by the industry. Jump 13 years, you know, back into 2023, and we are finally getting a sequel to this game, which is set to release pretty much continuing where the story left off, according to the rumors, and it should be sometime here within 2023. No specific date, so if we know anything about the gaming industry, it could be 2024. Or later. But if you want to see a little bit about what this game is about, there are remastered editions that are now available on Epic Games. But here's a little bit of a synopsis. Thank you, Steam, for a summary of the first game. When the wife of a best-selling writer, Alan Wake, disappears on their vacation, his search turns up pages from a thriller he doesn't even remember writing. A dark presence stalks in the small town of Bright Falls, pushing Wake to the brink of sanity in his fight to unravel the mystery and save his love. Presented in the style of a TV series, Alan Wake features the trademark Remedy storytelling and pulse-pounding action sequences. As players dive deeper and deeper into the mystery, they'll face overwhelming odds, plot twists, and cliffhangers. It's only by mastering the fight with light combat mechanics that they can stay one step ahead of the darkness that spreads across Bright Falls. With the body of an action game and the mind of a psychological thriller, Alan Wake's intense atmosphere, deep and multi-layered story, and exceptionally tense combat sequences provide players with an entertaining and original gaming experience. You can pick up the original games for $15 on Steam or your equivalent local currency, or $30 for the remastered editions on Epic Games or your local equivalent. I don't know if you ever got a chance to play Alan Wake when it was released or somewhat recently.
I feel very strongly about this. I'm going to tell you why. Because I found it to be one of the most boring games I have ever played in my life.
What?
My God.
This was the same year
what?
That Mass Effect 2 came out. Fallout New Vegas came out. Right? Like games that I replayed several times. Dragon Age Origins had expansions here. Like, great games came out in 2010, and Alan Wake was not one of them. I'm sorry, Andrew.
What? I don't know what to say.
Do you know how to give PTSD to a Dragon Age fan? You just say, enchantment?
Guys, I'm sorry, but it wasn't a good... Richard, what do you think? You played this game.
Yeah, I didn't care for it, I'm afraid to say. I just didn't.
I am so shocked. To be fair, I didn't play Farming Simulator until recently, and it turned out it was a pretty good game. So, Richard, if I can return the favor, try this out.
I did try it back in 2010 or whatever. You know what? Actually, I remember it being either confusing or difficult, and I can't remember which was the reason why I didn't like it. I think it was because it was difficult, and I'm not a very good gamer. But maybe in a revisit it would be less difficult, or maybe they've tuned it in patches. Maybe I played it early on in its life, but I just remember it being just not fun, and I can't remember why.
A lot of it is the light, you know, using the light thing, having your torch with you in order to shine. Get a lot of the darkness or whatever that, off these people that are being quote-unquote possessed by the darkness that is kind of spreading. And it's the only way to like damage enemies in order to, you know, unalive them, whatever the case is, and to further progress. It is a mechanic that is very difficult to understand and to get through. Chances are it was a little bit difficult. I find it very challenging at first to get used to as well.
So again, I'm going to point you to a game that does fight by light mechanic infinitely better than Alan Wake. Metro. The Metro series does this. It does this with a certain enemy type, dark, tense dungeon, Fallout 4-esque, future noir. And there, you have to literally shine your light, which is constantly running out, on enemies. But because it's an FPS, I feel like it transitions and it's more easily engaged with. Whereas Alan Wake is clunky third person. It's for me, it was just not an intuitive and fun experience, and it was very boring. But in Metro, the environment and everything really built it up a lot more. Your FPS, so you're more engaged. And so for me, Metro pulled it off much better. And those were shorter sequences. So you know, you could emotionally get through it, and it was tethered. Yeah. So I think other games do it better, if I'm honest.
Anyway, thanks for your promising playable Penguin.
And like, here's something promising, Chris. Here's your opinion. Stomp, 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 stomp. Fine. I mean, try it out. Don't try it out. It's entirely up to you. I think it's really worthwhile playing. So go grab it out. And when we've got more details about its actual release date, I'll let the people that are interested at least know.
Look, I mean, it was critically acclaimed. So maybe we're not the best audience. It was genuinely like a well-liked game. So we're probably not the best people to get an opinion from. But I agree. When you're talking about darkness and light games, there's so much better experiences for me anyway. There's games like Soma, which was incredible in its storytelling. And that was also like a dark light game, stay away from the dark, you know, and that was so much more enjoyable, and the story really sucked you in, and it was consistently revealed, and as you got to the end it was like a kick in the nuts. But you know, the Alan Wake I'm sure is great. I probably would enjoy it if I tried it now. I didn't when I did.
I would love to know what Sam would have thought, if she would have agreed with you, Andrew, or been on our side.
Well, let's just say for the sake of fairness that it's too all.
Thank you very much, Sam, for us putting your vote towards me, so it doesn't feel so overwhelmingly bad.
So I think in future, yeah, if a co-host is missing, Andrew, you get their vote.
I think it might just be the same thing, apparently.
According to a Tom's Hardware article that just released a couple of days ago, the stats are in for PC sales globally. The first quarter of 2023 sees very much diminished demand, surplus stock, and a declining macro environment, all playing a role in a significant decline in our traditional PC shipments around the world. Shipments of PCs declined by 29% from January to March 2023, hurting all PC makers across the board. Surprisingly, Apple seems like it was hurt the most. So global PC shipments totaled around 56.9 million units throughout across the globe, a 29% decrease compared to the same period in 2022, based on initial data from IDC. Analysts believe these results signify an end to the COVID-induced demand period and a temporary revert to pre-COVID trends. Shipments in Q1 2023 were even substantially lower than the 59.2 million and 60.6 million units in Q1 2019 and Q1 2018 respectively. While all PC makers lost sales in the first quarter, Apple was perhaps the biggest loser with a 40.5% year-on-year decline. Guys, is PC gaming dead? Or is this a consequence of the COVID pandemic and everyone going all in on PC purchases during lockdown, and thus breaking what we call the normal upgrade cycles that many gamers were traditionally in, and COVID comes in, sweeps the board, and everyone just spends money then and there during lockdown, thus creating a new global cycle that we're all on?
I'd like to read the full article, because does it make any separation between consumer and business hardware? Because for me, this is on first read, and being somebody who literally does IT procurement for a living, on first read through this, it just to me looks like a bell curve of, we hit the sort of top of the curve because everybody was responding to work at home and going mobile and buying PCs and laptops when COVID was a thing, and now that everybody's back to the office and budgets are tightening up and everything, and the supply of hardware is much more available, it feels like we're just sort of seeing that return to normal rather than because the decrease is 29% year on year from 2022. Yeah. If you look at the 2019 numbers, that's only a 3 million difference versus a 30% difference between this time next year. So to me, it's more the significance is probably more accurate between 2019 and this year versus 2022. And I think what you'll find is that there's a significant drop of desktop PC sales. And because everybody has now got reasonably new mobile devices because they were bought during the work at home and COVID responses, that there's not a huge drive for people to get to replace them at the moment. And I think what you're probably going to find is towards the beginning of next year, you're going to see numbers bigger than what it was in 2019, because then it's going to be the replacement cycle of the 2023 year business replacements. So my opinion is basically wait till January 2024, and you'll see a spike.
The source is the IDC quarterly personal computer device tracker, and it is for all shipments. So it's shipment-based, worldwide shipment-based, yeah. And market share. So it's all devices.
Yeah, so that makes me think that it's just, it's large, because I mean, business devices far outweigh consumer device purchases yeah. in this sort of segment. So it's just a business response to everybody's got devices now that we got them when COVID happened. So nobody needs a new one just yet. So it's gonna spike again when that massive PC replacement cycle comes around, when we get to the 3-year mark or 4-year or 5-year mark, whatever the business's replacement life cycles are, when it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Another big thing is with obviously COVID and factories shutting down. One of the big things, like semiconductors, that production just completely stalled. Now you've got semiconductors in just about everything. And with production of that, still trying to catch up on demand that were created during COVID and things.
That's true of cars, not true anymore.
However, you still experience, especially in the automotive industry at the moment, car manufacturers are still struggling with shortage of semiconductors going into vehicles because of it. And we see it a lot here in where we live, where like Mercedes-Benz shut down for like a week because they just do not have the parts. It's a shortage of parts and them trying to still get them in the country. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I would just like to get cards and other electronics at reasonable prices again.
So I think, Andrew, you're right. Like if that is from like 6 months to a year ago, because right now, like just look at Micron, for example, they're like the third biggest producer of those exact components you're speaking about. And, you know, in 2022, their average margin was something incredibly stupid, like 40%. Do you know how stupid 40% margin is in components? Like Richard will tell you, that is monstrous. You know what their average margin is in Q1 2023? Negative 50%. They are selling stock at a loss to get rid of it. That's how much oversupply there is in the market, in the chain right now. So I think what happened is everyone geared up because there was a shortage. Everyone thought COVID levels and demand would maintain and become the status quo. So they over-engineered additional supply because there was this massive shortage, high margins, and then that demand never actually materialized and peaked. And so now you're sitting with, I think, an oversupply, and everyone's like got too much stock and they're burning on it. But Richard's probably got a bit more insight from the business side.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think that there was a fear that there was going to be a massive shortage of IoT devices like routers and smart devices, and you said with the microelectronics for cars and engine units and engine control units and that sort of stuff. It did happen to a degree, but I think it's going to bounce back very quickly, and that is a direct product of China's response to COVID and shutting down factories at the drop of a hat, etc., rather than a general lack of parts and availability and manufacturing capacity. It's rather just a response to the human side of manufacturing rather than the demand and supply side of things. And then obviously the changes in shipping and the cost of shipping and stuff sent it all crazy, and it still hasn't really properly rebounded. So there's a lot of factors that are responsible for it. But ultimately, it's just because we all already have reasonably new laptops now because we got them all when our company sent us home. And I think that's really why sales are so low at the moment. Anyway, and this week's news that nobody cares about, it's episode 5 and we still haven't had this discussion yet. You know, the one about microtransactions. A report from PC Gamer last week reported that the upcoming Resident Evil 4 remake will feature 11 paid DLCs that are set to increase the power of your weapons in the game. Each of these upgrades will work a little differently, where one might increase the power of a gun, another might enable bullets to pass through up to 5 targets. These upgrades aren't exclusive to real money transactions. You can buy them with in-game currency, but of course there's a time cost to it because you've got to grind it out and get the weapon to the max level before you can buy the upgrade or the exclusive upgrade, and they cost a bundle of in-game currency, which means probably more grinding. A single weapon microtransaction will cost around $3 of real money, and bundles will be available if you want to get all 11 or 5 of them. You know, this is my least favorite, actually it's my second least favorite kind of microtransaction, where you're just paying to skip a game and the game is fluffed up and made long on purpose so that people want to spend the money. This is like mobile gaming gone into, you know, traditional PC and console gaming.
Yeah. My stand on microtransactions comes down to, if you want to have them in, by all means. I draw the line that if I pay for a game, right, with money, and then you still want to charge me things to pay to win in this example, you know, bullets that go through five targets, whatever, to make my life easier and everything, I've got a problem with that, especially in multiplayer. I think pay to win is rubbish. But if you're going to put it in there to make my gun look fluffy and it's purely cosmetic, I couldn't care. Just throw as much in. But where you purposely extend your game just to be like, no, 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 give us more money and we'll make it what it should actually be, that's rubbish.
I don't know if this is pay to win, because it's a single player game. So you're not paying to win, you're playing to speed up your experience. And that's what I have an issue with, because they're purposefully making the game a grind so that you drop the $4 or whatever to get the gun that lets you shoot through targets. So you don't have to grind through it all. If it's if it's cosmetic, if it's a couple extra levels that you don't need, you know, so be it. But this is literally paying for a shorter experience. Or rather, actually, I'd like to describe it as paying for the original experience before they threw a bunch of time-gated stuff into it.
It's like those energy meters in mobile games. You know, refill your energy for this amount of in-game currency, which you're going to be playing for weeks to get, or just buy a bundle of it for X number of dollars.
See, I'm a realist here. And I think, in your example, Andrew, that mobile freemium game, like, needs to be paid to be constantly supported and developed. So if you're getting the game for free and there are a few gatekeeping elements, that's by design, and because there needs to be incentive for the customer or the player to actually pay for things. So it is a requirement for that game to exist and nay to be consistently supported. I think in Richard's example, in a single player game, if you're paying for that experience and then it's purposefully a grind to then sell add-ons, starts becoming a little complicated. But then I also really love the Dota, you know, the Dota scenario, Dota 2, where you're just paying for skins and it doesn't impact the game in any way. And I just sold a boatload of skins that I had forgotten about when I left Dota in 2018. And, you know, back then I had made like $4,000 on all my skins. And now I've just made another 100 and odd rand from skins I'm never going to use. So, you know, I think it depends. It's contextual. And it really is about like what that game is and what it is to you and how you want to experience it. And it's going to be down to personal choice too.
Look, I think when with context, you know, DLCs have their place and paid DLCs have their place. If you have like the farming simulator thing we were talking about earlier, if you have a base set of 1,000 farming implements in your game and you want to add a few in and charge 10 rand or a dollar of each for those things, that's fine. You can use them. You don't have to. It's not going to change anything. You've also got a free mod hub with hundreds of mods in it that you can use or not. Fair enough. If you're purposefully making a grind out of something so that people pay money, and your base game has a price, so you're buying a game and then you have to also either grind through something, or you need to pay the few extra dollars to skip over the grind, or the game is much more difficult and much more time consuming if you don't. I kind of have a moral, you know, standoff against that. Whereas if it's a free game and the price of not having to spend 8 hours grinding enough currency to buy something is $3, that's fine to me, because you're giving your product away for free and you're giving people a choice to support you or not. The Deep Rock Galactic method, you know, and then there's the extreme cases. Everything's free, and if you want to look good, then pay an extra few dollars or whatever, or play the game for random drops or whatever the story is, and that's also a totally fine model. So all I'm just if you're making your game long on purpose to make people spend more money than they were originally paying, I have an issue. Anyway, microtransactions, they're a sticky subject. Everybody has their opinion.
Well, that about rounds up our news in gaming for the week. Thank you so much for tuning into episode 5 of Your Week in Gaming. And again, Esports Central, thank you so much for teaming up with us to allow us to give poor opinions on playable games that are coming up in the future, and for allowing people just to stomp on their opinions, I guess. You can find us on Twitter at YWIGpodcast and by email at yourweekingamingpodcast@gmail.com. I am Andrew, and you can find me on Twitter at my name is Pengu. And Sam, who's not here, you can find her on Twitter at Naori Mizuki.
My name is Richard. You can catch me on Twitter at Frogboots. Please come follow me. There's lots of exciting things happening there. All kinds of retweets and opinions. Why
That's
laughing?
Funny because he doesn't have any opinions on Twitter. No, it's really exciting.
I've got two tweets and six followers. So I'm just trying to make it sound exciting so people come on over to Frog Boots.
That's something new every week.
My name is Chris, and you can follow me at Farming Sim on Twitter. See you there.
Our next episode will not be on Friday the 21st, but Friday the 28th of April 2023 at 7 a.m. GMT plus 2 and across all major podcast platforms. We'll see you then. Have a good one. Bye.